Welcome to The Sunday Soother, a podcast, newsletter, and community about authentic living and compassionate personal development. I'm your host, Katherine Andrews, a life coach, online teacher, and writer focused on self-reflection, mindfulness, and how to create meaning in our everyday lives in practical ways. Join me weekly for conversations about personal growth, spirituality, self-discovery, and self-care, and how we can navigate this messy world with hope and humanity. Hi, everybody. It's Katherine here. Welcome back to the Sunday Soother podcast. I am so excited about the two concepts I'm going to be discussing with you today, because they're two tools that when I investigated them more fully and applied them to my life, they really started to change everything for me in the past couple of years. And I think if you can, you know, really sit down and listen, understand, and kind of stretch your brain and then start to apply these two concepts to your life and in your world and in your brain, then I think, you know, as we move into a new year, I think these two tools will really affect your 2021 and for the better. So I'm going to be talking today about the concepts of self-concept and life context. I feel like I'm going to be mixing up concept and context throughout, but it's self-concept and life context. And these two tools gave me shifts in perspective about the way I thought about myself and the world around me and the way I interacted with myself and the world around me in a way that brought huge positive changes into my life and the way that I thought about myself. So what are they? So self-concept, this is generally thought of as the image we have of ourselves in our brain, right? Our individual perceptions of our behaviors, our abilities, our unique characteristics. It's sort of a mental picture of your understanding of who you are as a person. You know, I guess you could call it your ego in a lot of ways, right? Like who you understand yourself to be, the stories that you've built about yourself, the way you interpret yourself and the way you interpret others interacting with you. Okay. And then we have life context. To me, your life context is the coherent lens or framework through which you see and understand the world. So self-concept is more just about you. Who are you in your head, right? What are you thinking of yourself? What is your ego version story of yourself? And this kind of goes more beyond stuff like titles like mother or student or employee or tennis player. It's sort of a more holistic picture of who you are in the world and the way you perceive yourself to be. And then life context is more about the outer world. How do you decide the rules of the world? How do you filter information about the world? What is the context through which you decide to see your life and the way it's unfolding in the world around you? So the way that I think, let me first start and say, we have these two things, whether we're aware of them or not. So maybe you're listening and being like, gosh, I don't think I have a self-concept, or gosh, I don't think I have a life context. You do. You may just not be aware of it. And I believe that with the self-concept and life context, we're too passive in these things, we're too unaware of these things, or if we're aware of our self-concept and our life context, we're too negative or harsh about them. Or our self-concept and our life context are often more about what others think of us and what we decide to think of ourselves and what we decide to think about how we want to view the world. Because that's the surprising thing, and that's the important shift. We get to decide what we think about ourselves and what we think of as our life context, which is basically what is the point of life and what's going on for us all of the time. So if you've been listening to the Sunday Soother for a while, or reading my newsletter, you know that I'm all about self-reflection and intentionality. So what I really want us to explore today is what do we feel that our existing self-concepts and life contexts are? And are they serving us? And if not, how can we start to change them to be concepts and contexts that support us in living the way we want to be and living the life that we want to. Okay. So I think that when we think of self-concepts and life contexts, that the two biggest problems are like what I said already, is that we're not even aware of the fact that we have them. And that in many cases, we're allowing other people and external circumstances to define what those two things are for us. And we accept that as reality. And in a lot of cases, especially for sensitive people, our self-concepts, you know, there are opinions of ourselves. It's often based and created on what other people are going to think about us, right? We're often socialized so deeply to be people pleasers, to worry about other people's opinions, and our image and our self-concept of ourselves is constructed in order to be presentable or to be liked for other people, to be approved by other people. But what I want you to consider is, like, how can you build a self-concept that's matched with how you really think and feel about yourself? So I want us to think more supportively, more intentionally about these two things. And I want us to shift into the reality that we're the ones who get to create our own self-concept and our own life context, okay? So if you've ever worked with me as a client or a student, you know that I'm obsessed with flowers. And I'm not even like, I don't even really know that much about flowers. Like, if you put a picture of five flowers in front of me, I would be shocked if I could name any of them unless they were like a carnation or something. But what I often have clients or students do at the start of any engagement that we're doing, a course or a one-on-one coaching, is pick an image, decide what flower they are, okay? And they're always like, this is a stupid exercise. They're not always like that. Some people are super into it. But a lot of people are like, I don't understand what the point of this is. And one, the point is it's kind of fun and I just like it. But the real point is it's the beginning of deciding to be who you are, right? I actually had a client who picked a flower, and I can't remember the kind of flower, but she was really shy when she presented the flower she wanted to be to me. And I was like, why are you shy? Like, you like this flower, you see yourself in it. And she's like, I just don't think I deserve to be that flower. I'm not as pretty. And I was like, okay, you get to be that flower, right? Because you get to start to decide your self-concept. So that's one reason, is I want you to kind of like externally look at yourself and like decide what characteristics you might share with this other beautiful creature, because it can help you start to be more compassionate to yourself. And I also ask people to choose flowers that represent themselves throughout the coaching or course process, because we're often just, we're much kinder to plants and our perception of how plants are in the world than we are to ourselves. But we're really just nothing more than, like, this is going to sound gross, but like hairy flesh covered plants, right? We have the same needs, the same way of growing. And in this context, when I'm talking about self-concept and life context, I like to think your self-concept is the kind of flower you want to be. And life context is the soil you are cultivating yourself in. And a lot of us are trying to be roses, right? A lot of us are trying to be the flowers we think other people are going to like. And we haven't decided and stopped to consider, like, what flower do we actually want to be? And a lot of us are planting ourselves in soil that is not supportive to the kind of flower that we actually want to be, or honestly, to any flower, right? So you may do okay in some soils, and you're probably going to do better in others, but the kind of soil you are in or the kind of life context you're in is going to determine the way you grow, okay? So that's just a fun activity if you kind of want to do that on the side. Like, what flower are you? My flower for me changes all the time. Most recently, I've decided I'm a hollyhock, because over the summer in Wyoming, there are hollyhocks everywhere. And I was just so taken by them, and I'd never seen them before. And they're just like these tall, gorgeous flowers that are like in riotous, all sorts of colors. And they're in big groups and they really stand out. And they just like really gave me a warm feeling. So I was like, I'm a hollyhock, but you know, next year it might change, and that's fine too. Your self-concept can always be evolving and growing. So what I want to talk about now is me and my former self-concepts and my former life contexts, because I think by talking about myself, you may get some insight into how this is possibly playing out in your life. So what was my former self-concept? The self-concept that Catherine held about Catherine. It was non-existent. to my eyes, right? Like, it was there, but I had no awareness of it. Like, I didn't understand that you could create a story or a concept of yourself, of who you were and who you wanted to be and who you were growing into. So it was just kind of, I felt kind of like this empty robot in a lot of ways going through life, and not necessarily in a bad way. Like, I knew I had things I wanted to go after, jobs and relationships and material things. But when I look back now, you know, I was one of those people whose self-concept was very fragile because it was very defined by others and external circumstances like success, dating, and relationships, right? My self-concept was so fragile that when I got the most minor of feedback or criticism from anybody, I like collapsed because I had not spent any time considering who I really was and who I really wanted to be and believing a very supportive and holistic self-concept of myself. I always think of the story that I had in my last job. So I had a good boss in my last job, and he was supportive and like kind of visionary and a good person, a kind person. And like many of us, it was very hard for him to give feedback to people. And one day he gave me some feedback, and he probably didn't do it in the best way. It was delivered via email. But his feedback via email was like, you don't really pay attention in meetings and you type too much during meetings. And it was really fair feedback. Like, I didn't get at that point, like, in order to kind of step into like a leadership thing, you really needed to be present in meetings. I thought being a good employee just meant working as much as possible. And there was just so much to do and I was so busy. So I was like kind of always working throughout meetings because I was like, I have to check the email. I have to check the Slack. I have to check this notification. I have to review this thing, and meetings are stupid. And so I'm just going to like be on my computer during entire meetings because nobody really values my opinion, I guess. And it doesn't really matter if I show up and present in these meetings. Of course it did. Like, I was a senior person at that company and I really should have been more present in meetings and closed my friggin' laptop. But the culture was also just that, like, stuff is so busy that you have to be like staring into your computer void at all times, checking email. So I don't blame myself too much for it. But anyways, he delivered that very fair feedback. And I got the email, and I was with a guy I was dating at the time, and I started crying. It wasn't even critical feedback. It was just like, hey, maybe you should think about doing this like totally reasonable thing. But I was so invested. My self-concept of myself at the time was so fragile. And it was also so invested in being seen by others as like perfect and successful that when I got the slightest bit of criticism, my kind of entire reality collapsed and I was so hurt and so harmed, right? Now, today, if I were still working in the corporate environment and I got that feedback, I would be like, I would consider, I was like, is this fair feedback? You know, it was. And I would be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go like thank my boss for that feedback and I'm going to take it into consideration and I'm going to try to do better because I do believe that I'm a good employee. I do believe that I'm successful. And I also always believe that I'm improving and able to improve. And I believe that feedback is a great gift. And those are things that I believe about life and myself. So now this isn't going to collapse me or pierce me like a balloon, but it's just going to help me evolve, you know, into the person I'm becoming. So that was my former life context, right? Like, it was really follow the rules, get a job, do well in that job, make a lot of money, get a boyfriend, like, and have this very like strong outwards presentation, look good, be thin, you know, try to dress well, try to be pretty. So the self-concept, it was so fragile in a way because it was so hollow on the inside. There was not really any thoughts that I was thinking about myself. And then when I kind of became a little more awake and I did notice more thoughts about myself, they were pretty self-critical, right? Like, this is also the other funny thing is that like I didn't realize that I had an inner critic until like 3 years ago. That's how kind of unaware of myself I was. But when I became aware of the inner critic, I mean, at least I was becoming aware of thoughts because that's kind of the first step. But I was like, oh gosh, like I don't think about myself very kindly. So my self-concept was kind of a mix of like this very fragile, hollow glass sphere in a way. But inside there was criticism. Like the things that did fill it were, a self-concept of negativity, of thinking I wasn't good enough in a lot of ways. So that was my former self-concept. Yeah, it wasn't great, you know? Looking back, I have a lot of compassion for that person and my former self because she didn't know any better, right? But it was hard, you know? And I feel sorrow and, you know, love for my former self who was so fragile in so many ways, you know? My former life context, not that dissimilar, kind of totally void. I had no conscious idea of a life context. Life was just life, right? And it was happening to you, and you tried to like get jobs and make money and, you know, have good relationships and be a good daughter. And then when it was all over, that was just like a big black void, right? And honestly, I actually think checking in with what you think happens to you after you die, it's a little morbid, but it's a great starting investigation point into understanding what your current life context might be, because it's literally the only thing we really have no idea about in this world. I mean, we have no idea about a lot of things, but that is like the biggest thing, that we have no idea about what actually happens. And so you get to choose what you think happens, right? And you can really be revealing to be like, I think we're separated from everybody we love forever, and it's a big black void of despair, and I never see anybody again, and it's just over. Because to me, like, that's kind of what I used to think. And it's kind of a depressing thought. So why was I choosing such a depressing thought about what happened to us after we die? Well, it turns out I had a pretty depressing life context, that we were here, there was not really any meaning beyond the material and our personal relationships. And that was that. That was just the way it was. You know, we were mammals flailing about in an coincidental earth. You know, everything is just kind of a biological or energetic mistake that is all just sort of random evolution that we ended up here. And we tried to do our best in the short time we're given, and then it's over. You know, life's a bitch and then you die. Basically was my life context, you know, maybe a little more positive than that. But that is a really good starting point. Like, what do you think happens after you die? Because it may give you some insight into what you think about everything else, right? So that was my former life context. It was just it. It was like I kind of showed up out of nowhere, ran through the grocery store of life, and was running as fast as I could, picking up experiences along the way, and then shooting myself out of the void, back into the void. So again, it was kind of a hollow and kind of ultimately negative life context. And I don't blame anybody who actually believes that. If you believe that with meaning and it kind of gives you support and joy to think about life that way for whatever reason, then that's good. It's just you want it to be checking in. Like, are your self-concepts and are your life contexts supportive of you and intentional and meaningful? Because it's fine whatever you choose. If you choose that version of a life context, it's no problem. As long as it feels good and supportive to the life you want to live. So what are my current self-concept and life context? So my current self-concept, now this is really accelerated as I've gone into entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurship forces you to define a new way of seeing yourself, right? I was listening to a podcast, I can't remember which one, where it was another life coach. Oh, it's called How to Make Money as a Life Coach, very straightforward. And the host is this woman named Stacy, and she was talking about she had the self-concept of herself a few years ago as a hot mess. You know, everything she just did was a hot mess. She couldn't, you know, she showed up late to meetings. She showed up to meetings in her yoga clothes. She showed up to meetings, you know, without showering or putting on, doing her hair or makeup or whatever. Because she just kind of had this like concept of herself that she was just this hot mess, and that was just kind of the way it was. And so I really had to understand that I kind of had, like I said, this more hollow or negative self-concept, kind of this fragile person with anxiety who always struggled in romantic relationships, who didn't know how to start her own career or her own company. And now because it's been a joy to shift into a self-concept of myself as completely resilient and capable and able to do anything I want. A self-concept of somebody who helps other people. A self-concept of as a really good life coach, as a really good writer, as somebody who helps people live more meaningfully and authentically. Like when you're creating a more positive self-concept, you kind of have to drink your own Kool-Aid. And I'm going to get into this a little bit, but most people are reluctant to do that because they think of that as narcissism, and it's not at all. You know, I really encourage you to drink your own Kool-Aid about how amazing you are. So I have it's always evolving, and I think I can do more work on it, but I have such a more resilient and positive self-concept of myself. Like, I think I'm awesome, you know? And you can probably, in the way I just said that, there's still a little hesitation. You can probably hear that, to hear that about myself. But I'm working on that, and I believe that one day I will fully believe that I'm an incredible human, right? And I'm capable, and I'm talented, and I'm impacting the world, and I have these powerful abilities, and I use my voice, you know, and that I really help other people. And that is my current self-concept that I'm believing and I'm leaning into and I'm growing into. And my current life context. So I've obviously become a very spiritual person. And I don't know, it depends on when you're coming into my podcast and into my sort of sphere of the Sunday Soother. But that is not the way I always was. And it's only really been in the last couple of years that I have fully embraced a life context of spirituality and meaning. Like I said, my former life context was just like, well, you know, whatever, like life's life and we're just trying to do our thing and there's no meaning to anything and everything is a random coincidence and a random occurrence and we're at the mercy of like a harsh, physical, meaningless world. And now I very much have a current life context of everything is a learning experience and that I'm always supported through the ups and downs of life by a force larger than me. You know, I don't really have a name for that force. Sometimes I just call it the universe, sometimes the creator. I don't really use God or spirit. I don't know. It doesn't really matter what you use, but just that sense of I truly believe in something larger than us that is supporting us through life. Now, this doesn't mean, I think when people decide or people see other people leaning into a spiritual life context, they think that it's all positive thinking, that life context means nothing bad ever happens. No, I'm quite aware life is 50-50. It's 50% difficult and negative things, and it's 50% joyful and affirming things. But whatever the process is, and that to me is a life context, that life is 50-50 and the universe is 50-50. That's why bad things happen and cruel and sometimes horrible and feels like meaningless things happen. That's the yin and the yang and the light and the dark of the universe that we live in. But I do believe that throughout that, we are also being supported even through the darkest times and through the brightest times. And so this is the things that I believe now. This is my current life context that I can always learn and I'm always supported. I believe that every human is sacred. I believe magic is real. I mean, I honestly have a belief that, like, I mean, can we just like look at our life and realize that like everything is magic already? It's just like magic is just science that hasn't been documented yet. Like, to me, it's magic that something like the internet exists. And 100 years ago, that would have been considered basically witchcraft. And today it's just like, whatever, it's the internet. And I'm like, holy crap. I mean, the internet is pretty magical. So think about all of the amazing things that we're going to be able to discover and understand in the coming decades and hundreds of years, you know, that we would have thought of today as magical. But once it becomes documented by science, it kind of loses its concept of magic. But to me, everything is kind of a miracle. So, I mean, and the way that this shows up in my life is, you know, everything's a lesson and I'm always supported. You know, annoying shit still happens to me. Like a couple of weeks ago, I lost my AirPods, my car got a flat tire, and I lost my car key. Now, these are things that would have 2 or 3 years ago, it would have completely derailed me. I would have just been like, life is cruel. Why does bad stuff always happen to me? This is so annoying. This is so frustrating. And with my personal work the last few years, I was able to be like, well, this is not, you know, great. Like, I'm not excited about these things. But if I, especially with the car stuff, I got a flat tire and lost my car key within 48 hours of one another. And I was like, I think somebody doesn't want me driving, right? Like, that's kind of the lens in which I chose to view that experience. And then what happened is, one, I learned how to change a flat tire. That was pretty cool because I'd never done that before and my boyfriend showed me, and now I actually know how to change a flat tire. A neighbor found my key and left me the sweetest note on my car. And it was just like, blessings. I found your key. It's on your front wheel. You know, I hope you have a wonderful day. Whoever found that key was named Kendra. And if I ever find that person, I'm like buying them flowers, because it gave me the joy that there are good people out there. And so, I mean, because that person, like, I apparently had lost my key, like, right by, it had fallen off my keychain, like, right by my car. And I have a Honda Fit, and, like, the key is, like, a Honda Fit key. And so somebody could have, like, taken off and stolen the car. I mean, even though I'd had a flat tire at that point, it was not a good week for automotive things. But this woman, I'm assuming it's a woman, found it and just left this really sweet note. And I was just like, I am surrounded by neighbors who are watching out for other neighbors. Isn't that the most incredible thing, right? So that's kind of how I view the world now. And you can see how the shift has happened for me, and that it's been largely a choice. It's been largely a choice that I wanted to see myself and the world through more supportive, intentional, meaning-filled, positive ways. Again, it doesn't mean viewing myself or the world doesn't mean that hard things don't happen or there aren't struggles. It's just that they're more imbued with magic for me. And that's made all the difference for me in my life. Okay. So I am going to offer some concrete tips for if you're interested in shifting your self-concept and interested in shifting your life context to be more supportive for you. But I want to talk about this thing is that having a positive, healthy self-concept and a supportive life context is not narcissism or being self-absorbed or being self-obsessed or loving yourself at the cost of helping others and the world. It's just loving yourself. And I read this somewhere. It's fine to be full of yourself. Who else are you going to be full of? It's fine to love yourself. It's fine to want the best for yourself and believe the best about yourself. It's more than fine. It will support your life. And in my opinion, somebody with a healthy self-concept is critical to actually authentically helping other people and helping change the world. Like, I couldn't do the work that I do of helping other sensitive women if I believed in my heart I was a pile of crap and not a good life coach, right? And if I had a negative life context, that wouldn't support the people who read or listen to the Sunday Soother. Because I'm so much more grounded as the flower, you know, to go back to my original example, as the flower I want to be and in the soil that nurtures me, I'm able to strengthen my roots and be a source of joy and comfort and inspiration and learning for other people. Narcissism is when you have an unhealthy self-concept. Well, you know, the person who gets me most in the world, Donald Trump, is a narcissist. His self-concept of himself is, though it seems bombastic and self-obsessed, it's very fragile and it's harmful to other people. When you have a positive self-concept of yourself and a positive life context, those things do not come at the expense of other people, right? They come supporting yourself and liking yourself and choosing to think positively about your life experiences and yourself. It doesn't have to come at the expense of other people. So I just want to assure you that this is not an exercise of self-absorption and self-obsession, right? This is an exercise of nurturing yourself and deciding that you want to grow in a sturdier, more nourished sort of way so you can do the work and be the way you want to be in the way in the world that's supportive to yourself and possibly to other people if that's something that you want. So it's just so hard because sensitive people in particular are so hard on themselves. And I think that we find some virtue in that self-harshness. And I want to encourage us to say that's not actually being virtuous. It's actually inflicting self-harm on ourselves to think those negative things about ourselves. And I want to say also, if you're very judgmental and critical of yourself, the flip side of that coin that I always see and that we rarely want to admit to ourselves or to others, we're often very judgmental of other people and critical of other people, especially of those who do have a healthy self-concept of themselves and people who believe in and advocate for themselves. So if you're going to start this work, I need you to understand that you deserve to have good things and you deserve to believe good things about yourself and support yourself, and so do other people. So notice where you're hard on yourself, but also particularly notice, who do you judge? Who annoys you? Who do you think is obsessed with themselves or high on themselves? And why? You know, is it because they love themselves and go after the best things for themselves and believe in themselves and speak about themselves kind of like they're goddesses? And really ask, like, why is that a problem for me? Okay. So, sounds nice, you might be saying, Catherine. I would love to start to believe when I lost my car key and got a flat tire that somehow this is a good thing for me. Okay, so this is kind of what I work on in my coaching. So honestly, if you want to do this, working with me in one of my courses or working with me as a coach is a great way to start. But let me give you some tips on how you can start doing this on your own. I mean, one is the first one is you just have to decide that you want more meaning and positivity in your self-concept and in your life context. And really, I could stop there because it's a choice. You have to understand that you get to believe, you get to be the one who creates the thoughts about yourself and the world around you. You get to create that life context and that interpretation both of yourself and how things are happening for you. Okay. So just even stepping into the belief that, like, you are not living life passively and others don't get to define the way you think about yourself and the way that life is for you is really, really the first step. Simply just deciding, I want to change this. I want to be more positive. I want to have a healthier love for myself and think about myself more kindly. And I'm going to do everything I can to get there. But what you can move into next is self-observation. Okay. And this is just noticing. This is where I started. Morning pages was really the practice that helped me with my self-observation the most. And somehow you've been in the Sunday Soother sphere and you haven't heard me talk about morning pages. It's from The Artist's Way, which is a book by Julia Cameron. Simply, you write 3 pages in a notebook by longhand every morning, first thing when you wake up. It's a brain dump. What you start doing by doing that brain dump is you start to notice the things that you're thinking constantly that have been kind of more like a low hum in the background of your brain and your heart. And you start to put them on paper and you start to be like, oh shit, at least that was my experience, right? So you can do morning pages to learn self-observation, but you can also come at it from some different ways. Write down 5 thoughts you notice having in a day without judgment. Just write them down. You don't have to do anything about them. Write down 5 things you said to yourself in one day. Write down 5 things you said to another person about anything in a day. And then write down 5 results you notice in your life. I'm going to get more into this in a future episode, but there is a model. It's called self-coaching model and thought work out there that its proposal, its hypothesis, which I believe, is that your thoughts create your results. So if your results are that you don't make as much money as you want to, you don't have good friendships, and you're single, those you can notice those results and back your way into understanding, well, what are my thoughts about those things? Okay. The next step is to shift into self-compassion. We live in such a harsh culture. I mean, the American, like, puritanical impact on the way we think about ourselves cannot be overstated. That beating ourselves up and motivating ourselves by being mean to ourselves is the best and only way forward. I have found the complete opposite to be reality. Self-compassion and small changes are the way for change. Now, what self-compassion looks like in this kind of work is merely, okay, I have some harsh thoughts about myself. And that's okay. I've been conditioned to do that. I'm going to try to think 1 positive thought about myself tomorrow, or 1 more supportive thought about myself tomorrow, right? So it's not like, ugh. I mean, I see this all the time with women who have strong inner critics. There's a second layer. Once they realize they have a strong inner critic, they beat themselves up for having a strong inner critic. So that doesn't work, right? Like, it's just like pouring more fire or pouring more gasoline on the fire. You really want to be like, okay, like, I have a strong inner critic. And I'm just going to say 1 nice thing a day to myself. And I don't even really have to believe it at first, but I'm just going to try. Right? So that's what self-compassion looks like. Or self-compassion can also look like, it makes sense that I believe this thing. You know, it makes sense that I struggle with X. you know, from my particular background or issues that I've dealt with, it makes sense that this would be an issue for me. And that's okay. I'm going to work on it in small ways, right? So sometimes just saying, like, it makes sense that this is a thing for me is a way to be self-compassionate, right? I mean, the best way to be self-compassionate is to talk to yourself. And I'm not saying this figuratively. I am saying this literally. Talk to yourself out loud like you were a five-year-old. I say this all the time. People find it very difficult to do. So I'm trying to think of an example that I did this for myself recently. But I'm going to create a hypothetical example because I'm having trouble thinking of a real one. Because for me, it's actually so automatic now that I don't even really notice myself doing it, talking to myself like a five-year-old. But let's say like I had been trying to work out more and I just maybe got one workout in that week and I didn't work out the other 6 days. So a previous way of not being self-compassionate would be like, ugh, you slob, you lazy slob, you never work out. Like, why can't you just go get on that bike for 20 minutes? What's wrong with you? Now, this is probably pretty broken if you're speaking to a five-year-old like that. Now, the way you might speak to a five-year-old would be like, you know, it's okay, you've had a lot to do this week, but you know that working out makes you feel good, right? So let's just try like this 10-minute video, and we're just going to do that today, and we're going to let that be a start, and we're going to come back tomorrow and see what else we can do, right? You're doing a great job, and let's just try to stretch ourselves a little bit, okay? So that's just an example of how you can start talking to yourself like a five-year-old. Another way you can step into this work is thought work. So I will do a more in-depth episode about this in the future, and I just referenced it already, but this is a model proposed by a woman named Brooke Castillo from the Life Coach School. And thought work is the proposal that your thoughts about circumstances create feelings, which create actions, which then create the results in your life. So you want to notice your thoughts, because if you're having a thought that, say the circumstance is working out, circumstances must be totally neutral. No adjectives, no opinions. Circumstance is simply working out. Your circumstance is not, I am bad at working out. But the circumstance is working out. Your thought is, I'm a lazy slob for not working out more. The feeling that may inspire is probably shame. The action, shame is the worst motivating tool we can use. I could do an entire podcast episode about trying to use shame as a motivator, but it doesn't work personally and it doesn't work societally. But shame, the feeling of shame would lead to the action of, well, what's the point? I'm just going to watch Netflix again. And then the result is you don't work out. Now, if the circumstance were working out and the thought were, I worked out once this week, I can probably work out at least once more. And I'm going to make that plan right now. The action would be like feeling a little more inspired and hopeful, or rather that would be the feeling. And then the action would be to work out once or twice more. And the result is you worked out three times that week, which was like more than the zero of last week. Okay, so this is why it's important to be observing your thoughts, because your thoughts create your feelings, which create your actions, which create your results. And then the final step and tool that I use is something I call rewiring journaling. And this is a worksheet and a model that I offer to my clients and my students. It's a journal template where you fill in the blanks about a variety of different things every day. It takes about 5 or 8 minutes. And the things and prompts that I give you are helping you to consciously create the self you want to be, who is like believing these things about yourself. You can also look up the holistic psychologist, and she has something called a future self journal, which is very similar to this. So those five tools are just deciding you want to create a more supportive self-concept and life context, self-observation, self-compassion, thought work, and rewiring journaling to kind of put all of the stuff into practice. So you know, if you've been reading and listening, you know I'm promoting right now the waitlist of Shift, which is my 2021 group coaching program. It's a goal-setting program and dream incubator for sensitive people. And this is going to be a huge part of the work that we're doing. Self-concept and life context, it just plays, I cannot overstate the role it plays in achieving your goals. Because self-concept and life context make up a huge part of your identity. And if you have a self-concept that is not supportive, or a life context that's not supportive of achieving things that are important to you, then I don't care what bullet journal or pens or post-it system you use, you will not be able to achieve that goal if your identity does not involve being a person who can easily achieve that goal. So we have to work in shift. We're going to be working from an identity level basis of becoming the person who achieves the goals that we want. Now, I work a lot, whether it's in my courses or in my one-on-one coaching, I end up working a lot with women who are creative. A lot of writers, which may not surprise you, I'm a writer. Some women who want to start their own business, right? In particular, I seem in the past 6 months, I'm like, gosh, I'm working with a lot of women who want to write a book. And I have this one client who is an incredible writer, but doesn't think of herself as such. And she's been struggling to finish the first draft of her first book. And so we were diving in and exploring, like, what is the block that's happening here, right? So I have a process by which I walk some of my students and my one-on-one clients through finding your core self-concept, your core belief about yourself. And hers sounded like this: I'm not hard enough on myself. I feel my age and failure looming. I should quit trying. Okay. I'm never going to live up to my potential. Now, you can imagine somebody who really thought these things about herself. Of course, she would struggle to finish a draft. She would struggle to finish everything. If you're having all of these negative self-concepts of yourself, of somebody who is not living up to her potential, that's too old, it's, you know, not hard enough on themselves, then there's no reason that they would find it fulfilling or easy to sit down and finish a draft of a book, right? So her core belief really and self-concept was, I'll never live up to my potential. And if I don't create or produce something extraordinary, I will have failed. So we were talking about this and I was like, so what do you think as you've noticed about like all of these things about these beliefs and this self-concept? And she looked at me and she's like, I'm starting to get really bored of it. And I was like, yes, because then I knew we were going to do some good work together. Because when you get over your own bullshit, your own exhaustive self-criticism about yourself, and you're ready to do that, oh my God, you are going to do amazing things. Now, it still may be hard. It still may be a challenge to be creating a more positive life concept, in life context. But oh my God, when you're bored and you're like, I'm tired of these fucking things I say about myself and I don't want to be this way anymore. Oh my God, you are like a rocket ship ready to launch, and like working with a coach or in a course is like the rocket fuel. I don't know how spaceships work, but it's the accelerator, right? Okay. Because once you're ready, once you're bored and once you're tired, you are ready to let go of this self-concept and you're ready to step into a new one, right? And that's what we're going to be doing in shift. And that's what I do in my one-on-one coaching. So I hope this is helpful. I want you to think about, and I'd love to hear from you on Instagram or email. You know, if you think about this and you do some self-reflective work, what do you think your current self-concept of yourself is? And what do you think your current life context is? And if those are not supportive of you, what would you like them to be? How do you think you can start shifting from one into the other? I'd love to hear from you. You can DM me on Instagram at Katherine Andrews. Just let me know. Did this resonate with you? What are you thinking about? And what are you noticing about yourself as you're moving into 2021? Because it's a fresh year, you know? I mean, it's completely arbitrary, but a lot of people use the start of a fresh year to do some new things for themselves. So maybe 2021 can be the year for you in which you start to shift your self-concept and your life context into something that's more supportive, something that's more true, something that's more intentional and authentic. And when you do that, it's going to change your life, but it's also going to change the life of other people around you who need you to believe those things because they need your help too. That's it for today. Have a beautiful week ahead, and I will talk to you soon. That's it for this week's Sunday Soother. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you have a moment, go on over to iTunes and leave me a 5-star review. That's how other people find this podcast and the message of hope and compassionate personal growth I'm hoping to spread to many more people just like you. You can find me on Instagram at Katherine Andrews and find out more about The Sunday Soother at thesundaysoother.com. You can also check out my services, courses, and coaching at katherinedandrews.com. Have a great day ahead.